we're taking a legacy historic business, nearly 75 years old, and refreshing it, recapitalizing it so that it can be a better performer, a better company, a better partner in the future.
I'm talking today with David Eberstein, CEO of Patterson Food Processors and Texas Meat Packers. Welcome, David. Tell me, how did you become associated with Patterson and Texas Meat Packers in the first place?
Well, I first became aware of Texas Meat Packers and Patterson Food Processors in early 2018. And what I saw was an opportunity to take a historic company, family-owned business, third generation, founded in the 1940s, and make it an even better company in the future by recapitalizing the balance sheet, investing in the business, investing in equipment, investing in capabilities and people, and hopefully creating better products and services and execution for our customers.
How would you say that has translated into a safer, more purified processing service such that you are taking all necessary steps to make sure that from sourcing to distribution, the products are the best they can possibly be?
Well, my personal motto and the model of the company going forward is best practices equals best execution. And what we're implementing and improving upon what was already here is best practices all throughout the organization. And it starts with sourcing, and then it goes to execution on the plant floor with our people, with our supervisors, and everything through the distribution chain all the way to our customers and to their stores and to their retail outlets.
Sometimes when I run across companies that become under new management, the new management has found that processes and procedures and policies were not as well documented as they could have been. Is that something that you have addressed, and do you feel that you're on the road to making those processes, policies, and procedures the best they can be?
I think that's exactly what we're doing, and it really comes down to attention to detail and shining a light in all aspects of the business, but mainly in those processes that rely on food safety and in the quality and execution of what all of our employees are doing. So yes, I would agree with that 100%. Sometimes companies over the life of their history or the course of their history, they lose track and lose focus on some of those fundamental aspects of the business. And so that's what I'm doing. That's what the management team is focused on, is implementing and reinforcing some of those practices, protocols, and policies to ensure best execution. Food safety, focus on food safety, focus on protocols, right? Because the two recalls in the last 14 months or whatever, you know, a little over a year, that were mainly caused by, I'd say, lack of execution.
Now, when you say lack of execution, were you able to identify the specific areas of execution that needed improvement, and you've addressed those, and going forward, you don't expect to have any more problems?
Exactly. In both of those instances, the issue was identified and the practices and protocols were amended to prevent that from happening in the future.
Okay, well, that's great to know. A lot of times, it's not that companies have problems along the way. It's how they deal with them and whether those problems occur again that is the real problem. And sounds like you've addressed everything that needs to be addressed so that your distributors, your restaurants, the final consumers of your products can be confident that they're going to get a product that they can feel very comfortable with and don't have to worry about.
Exactly. And that's our mission. That's my goal. And that's what I'm focused on.
Okay, great. Now, In terms of new products, are there any new products coming on the horizon that are different than your traditional line that you want to talk about now?
Right now, we've got several things that are in development, but I think at least over the near term, we're focused on doing what we already do even better and trying to be the best partners that we can. Like I tell our sales team, we don't want to be just a vendor. We want to be a partner to our customers, because what we're supplying to them is oftentimes a key input to their product and their offering. And so when we execute well, they're able to execute well. And to me, that's more of a partnership than it is a straight customer vendor type of engagement. And so that type of thinking that trying to reinstill into the team and to get everybody in that frame of mind, zero sum game, it's we do well and they do well and therefore we all do better together. We are bringing in some new machinery, upgrading some existing equipment and machinery, making some upgrades to the plant, and overall making capital investments into the business to make it a better company.
Okay, well, sounds good. Have you empowered your sales force? You mentioned them a little bit ago, your sales team. Have you empowered them with what I would call a unified response, a unified message, just in case they receive any pushback to the negative publicity out in the field?
Absolutely. And we talk about it all the time. The way I think about the sales team is they're the tip of the spear of our business. And they're the first ones to hear about any kind of negative feedback or any execution issues or anything negative about our company. And so we have all worked together on in terms of how to message some of the issues of the past and why going forward, we don't think that there'll be an issue going forward and shouldn't be for our customers.
Well, that's good to know. And I would gather then that your customer base has been assured and reassured that you have taken steps to rectify whatever the problem was and that they can order with confidence and serve with confidence, knowing that the end user is going to get a quality product. And that's always good. Now, one other question I have is, what have you done or what are you doing in the way of community service or give back?
The company has historically supported a number of local charities, including the Fire and Police Officers Association and a number of local food shelters. Yes, going forward, we will continue to do that.
All right, that sounds great. Anything that you'd like to add?
The main takeaway is my focus as the incoming and new CEO of Texas Meatpackers is execution and serving our customers to the best of our ability. And in focusing on the details and the best practices of our industry, I think we'll be able to do that and then some going forward.
Sounds good. Now, I understand that your association with Patterson Food Processors and Texas Meatpackers came via Everstone Capital. Everstone Capital is a boutique private equity investment firm based in Fort Worth, Texas, seeking opportunities to provide capital to lower and middle market companies across various industries, including food manufacturing, oil and gas, and consumer and business services. Let's continue.
It took me a little bit to realize that Everstone is kind of a play on your last name. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually, which my wife thinks is ridiculous, but I kind of like it. I don't know.
I don't think it's ridiculous at all. I think it's a great name. And just like when I came up with Dalfort Media, I thought, well, people in North Texas will realize Dal for Dallas and Fort for Fort Worth.
Oh, but yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But you'd be amazed at how many people don't realize
that. Together. Yeah.
And actually, that's good because I thought it would, after the fact, be too localized, but it turns out it's not. But
yeah, exactly.
I like Everstone Capital. I like Everstone. That's a good, solid-sounding name.
Well, thanks. Well, good. Oh, well, I appreciate that. Yeah. So, yeah, Everstone is a company that I founded the intention of finding and acquiring interesting small and mid-sized operating companies and in industry, more or less somewhat industry agnostic, but I've got now experience in looking for manufacturing, food manufacturing, also in the energy space, whether it's equipment or services or minerals or other type of working interest assets. So it's a little bit of a broad approach, and it's mainly, I would say, the main drivers is just opportunistic, finding the right situations and set and ingredients that can create an interesting investment opportunity.
Did you come from the mergers and acquisitions industry?
Yes. I mean, my background is private equity. And so I've been in the private equity industry for about a decade and then finance for most my entire career, really. Before business school, worked on Wall Street and for Lehman Brothers, worked in more structured finance, commercial real estate finance. So did a lot with hard assets. And then got into the private equity industry after business school.
How do you happen upon these opportunities? Do you have a network of people that is looking for you, so to speak? Or are you looking yourself? How do you find these opportunities?
For lack of a better, I wish I could manufacture it. It is somewhat of an idiosyncratic process.
Uh-huh.
It's a combination of everything. It's hard to attribute it to one factor. It's a little bit of marketing, it's a little bit of networking, and it's a little bit of luck, you know? And it kind of just, you put all those things together and things percolate, and then you kind of look at a lot of things, and some things are more interesting than others, and you dig deeper on the ones that meet the criteria, and, you know, hopefully you can find one or two in any, you know, per year.
You may have heard of Thomas Stanley, who wrote the book, The Millionaire Next Door. And in his profiles of millionaires next door, he found that many of them were owners of small businesses, medium-sized businesses that would be, well, let's say dull from the outside. They're not exciting. They're not high tech.
Right.
They're not leading edge. Yet, those were the types of businesses that were the most successful, had the most longevity, and created the most value over time. And if you haven't read that book, it's a very interesting book.
I think the way I think about it is, I think my nature is I'm more geared towards it as a value investor. I think that's just my natural orientation. I like to pay a reasonable price, and you know, I read a lot of Benjamin Graham and Warren Buffett when I was in business school and thinking along the lines of a margin of safety. And when you put capital to work, you have a view of the future, but you want to have a margin of safety because it's almost impossible nearly impossible to predict the future. And so, yes, some things can go right, but other things can go wrong. But even if a few things go wrong and a couple things go right, I can still do well. I can still make money. And so what that leads to, it leads you to a lot of basic boring businesses, like you described, that are not sexy, but you can get them at a reasonable valuation and they have good cash generation properties to them. And over the long run, I think that's what will, that's one way that I think. I mean, look, there's a lot of ways to skin the cat. You can make money investing in a lot of different ways, but I think this suits my personality the best.
Okay, so it sounds like you have your eyes and ears open and you probably have a network of people who are doing the same and you're looking for these, let's call them bread and butter mundane businesses that have value that maybe the trouble in the business is not so much the business concept, but perhaps some financing issues,
Exactly.
Ownership or management issues, marketing issues, accounting issues, that if you have a basic business that's sound, where the product or service has value and people want to buy it, they have been buying it and continue to buy it, seems to me like that's the best kind of business. So I will look be on the lookout for those types of businesses, and if I find one, I'll certainly.
That's right, and it needs to have a little bit of scale. You know, I mean, I think it's probably 10 million plus of revenue, and you know, a million, 2 million plus of EBITDA or operating profit. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, where can you put capital to work? Well, that can kind of unlock something or create value just in and of itself, or fix an issue, right? And a lot of people get themselves into capital constrained situations, and what I say, at least what happened here, a little capital can go a long way, and you can really relieve the pressure. That's kind of what I was able to do here at Texas Meatpackers.
Yeah, and often when you've been in a business, family business, for so many years, maybe you have some blinders on. You're not really looking at the larger picture. You're looking
at what
happened last year and 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And when you have a fresh set of eyes and a creative brain looking at a situation, oftentimes that can make the difference if you are able to get control and have the ability to implement what needs to be done.
100%.
So anything else you'd like to add about Everstone?
No, that's it. I think that pretty well captures it.
To learn more, visit everstonecap.com or email David at david@everstonecap.com.